Om Rim Good evening, and welcome to our, sixth session of Kundalini, the Inner Goddess, and the Evolution of Your Consciousness. It's, again, incredibly delightful to be with you all here tonight, and those of you who are tuning in later on the call. And I think all of us who are part of the listserv, who've been receiving the emails, have been really moved and delighted by everyone's sharing and wisdom and openness and insight. So much of the gift of these classes is really the sangam, that is to say, you guys, and the conversation that goes on. So tonight, speaking of conversation, we're going to be working primarily with the Vishuddha Chakra and then rising to the Ajna. And the sounds that we just heard are the sounds of the Bija Mantras of the Vishuddha Chakra, the sixth chakra. One of the reasons why this the experience that we're going to tune into tonight is, I would say, so up for many of us is precisely because it is so connected to the heart chakra. And as a couple of people wrote in about where the heart chakra begins and ends. So I just want to start by saying that my own experience of the connection between the throat and the heart is that as Kundalini opens through the center of the body, let's say from the diaphragm, from the solar plexus, up through the chest regions, and up into the space in the throat, that opening is actually a continuous process. It's not, at least in my experience, an opening that's confined to one center or another, but it really is the opening of an entire region, because the throat and the heart are certainly in many traditions, and to a large extent in my personal experience, the throat and the heart are very much connected. So because they're so connected, it can feel like one chakra, and it can feel like, you know, the opening in the heart or the opening in the throat can feel as though this whole part of your being, the fourth chakra and the fifth chakra, and then up to the sixth chakra, to the Ajna, begin to be activated. And along with those activations, the experience of deep purification and indeed of the effects, the results of purification. My own early experience of the opening of the throat chakra involved a physical movement, which, again, I think is not uncommon, and I believe many of you have had the experience. One being where my head would move back between my shoulder blades, still happens sometimes, my mouth would open, and I would be locked into that position for minutes at a time. And there were many, many times when that experience of, I called it my neck kriya, kriya being the word for spontaneous physical movement of kundalini, there would be times when it was actually quite painful. It would sort of activate the whiplash, the old whiplash injury in my neck. But then there would be times when it would literally feel as though there was a complete opening through that kriya, through that movement, and I would feel as though something was being poured down my throat, as though Shakti was being poured down my throat and into my heart. And years later, as I started researching the texts on the Kundalini and the after effects of Kundalini awakening, I discovered that this movement is actually a hatha yoga posture that's part of the back bend. It's kind of an advanced state of the back bend, which is a hatha yoga posture that opens the heart. So very much, there's a very deep natural connection between these two chakras. So as the heart chakra and the fifth chakra are being purified, what we also often experience is that the blocks in our voice are purified as well. And when I say blocks in our voice, I mean the blocks in, you know, the way the sounds come through our vocal cords, but also the way the voice, as that is to say, the expression of our authenticity, of our capacity to speak truth, that also begins to be purified and to come online. And I know that's something that many of you experience. It's a very big deal in the journey of Kundalini, actually. So with that recognition, we're going to chant a little bit. We're going to chant the Kundalini Dhyana Mantra to begin with. And I'd like you to find yourself a posture in which you feel comfortable and in which you can sing. And in this translation of the Kundalini Dhyana Mantra, we contemplate the upward flowing Kundalini Devi, Goddess Kundalini, coiled around the self-born lingam, the form of Shiva, who is nectar, who is subtle, who is the embodiment of creation. Kundalini herself, who is the creator, sustainer, and absorber of the universe, who also transcends the universe, and who is wisdom herself. So let's just start by allowing the inhalation to feel as though the presence in the heart rises up to the space in the hollow of the throat, where we begin to become aware of the Vishuddha chakra. Vishuddha means very pure. Especially Vishuddha means pure. V means especially or particularly. And letting your attention be present in the hollow of the throat, almost as though there is a cave or a cavern that opens up through the throat, through the palate, through the head. And in this sense of an open, hollow space, a cave, from your throat through your head, allow the mantras to reverberate as we chant. Dhyayet kundalinim devim swayambhulingavishtinim shyamam sukshmam shrishti rupam shrishti stiti layatmikam Vishvatitam jnana rupam chintayet urva vahinim dhyayet kundalinim devim swayambhulinga vishtinim. You can allow the awareness to flow with the breath, feeling the breath Now simply in the nostrils, slightly cool on the inhalation, slightly warm on the exhalation. Be aware of the parts of the body that naturally move with the inhalation and exhalation. Perhaps the sides of the rib cage, the upper abdomen, the chest or the shoulders. Perhaps you may also be aware of the heartbeat. And as we approach these upper chakras, these transpersonal chakras, we're going to tune into Kundalini rising from the heart to the Ajna, to the chakra between the eyebrows. This is one of the ways in which the sages of the early tantric tradition meditated on rising Kundalini. They began with the heart, and they contemplated her rising up into the head and up through the crown. So you can begin by feeling the inhalation flowing from the region behind the sternum up through the center of the throat to the space in the very center of the head. It's just behind the space between the eyebrows, but in the middle of the head. And with the inhalation, feel the breath rising with Om Aim Hrim Shrim, our mantra for this class. Up into the center of the head, and for some of you it may rise up through the crown. And then with the exhalation, feel the breath flowing down to the heart. Om Aim Hrim Shrim, with the inhalation rising from the heart through the throat to the center of the head. The exhalation flowing down into the heart. And perhaps for some of you it flows down through the solar plexus towards the base. Because this process is personal and spontaneous. But if you're deliberately following the form of this moment's practice, let's sense the inhalation rising as the light of Kundalini from the center of the chest up through the throat to the center of the head with Om Aim Hrim Shrim. Feel the exhalation flowing down to the heart. Om Aim Hrim Shrim with the rising breath. Invoking Goddess as rising Kundalini. Then allowing the exhaled breath to flow down into the heart, expanding the heart. So as we continue, you're very welcome and indeed invited to connect your awareness, to keep your awareness connected to the flow of breath and mantra. The inhalation, bringing your attention from the heart up through the center of the head, and probably for many of you, expanding up through the crown. Then the exhalation, the apana, the downward breath, flowing from the crown down to the heart. And one of the qualities of the Vishuddha Chakra is the quality of space, of spaciousness, which happens to be my favorite meditation practice, meditating on space. So I'd like to invite you also to become aware of the space that we are all inhabiting, the space around your body, the space, the virtual space that's arising through our connection, the space through which sound travels, and the subtler spaciousness, which is the taste or touch of Shakti herself, of the great heart awareness herself. The element of the Vishuddha is ether, is space. And in my practice, in my contemplation, and also for many of you, the essential quality of space, of spaciousness, of etheric consciousness, when space is infused with Shakti, when space is infused with awake Kundalini Shakti, the space which might ordinarily feel empty is actually filled with pulsating presence, with that extremely subtle blissfulness of Shakti's touch, which in my experience begins to become alive in a new way when Shakti moves in the heart, when Shakti begins to open the air element, the element of prana, and then kind of attenuates and expands into a spaciousness that's subtler than touch and yet is infused with subtle touch. And the more we begin to experience the taste, the flavor of this subtle, etheric, Shakti-filled spaciousness, the more we become, as it were, addicted to it, and the more we want to be present to it, and the more we begin to be able to hold a sense of presence, of awake, alive presence, literally holding us, I often personify the spaciousness as the goddess Bhuvaneshwari, the lady of space. And yet it's not necessary to personify it, simply to tune into it, to tune into space as presence, space as Shaktified awareness. The awakening of Kundalini in the heart chakra, in the heart center, is in Tantra, in the Kashmir Shaiva tradition, it's often described as the awakening of Chit Kundalini, Chit meaning awareness. So the awakening in the heart is the beginning of the transformation of your sense of self, your sense of awareness, not only the way you experience love, not only the way you hold emotions, but the entire process of how consciousness, that is chit shakti, creative, pure awareness, operates inside your particular field of awareness. There's a contemporary teacher of a Tibetan tradition. I'm pretty sure it's the tradition of Mahamudra, who's written a book about this, and he makes a very beautiful kind of pointing out instruction about how local consciousness, local awareness can actually join with global awareness. And what I have found is that this experience of beginning to recognize your own awareness as an ever-present experience that holds your thoughts and your emotions, and that you can more and more attune to in the course of life, that there's a kind of natural unfolding that occurs as Kundalini opens us, in which we begin to experience a kind of merging of our local awareness into a broader awareness, and at moments into the all-pervading awareness. And all of this really does begin to occur in the aspect of the unfolding that is described in the tantric texts as the opening of the Vishuddha chakra, the fifth chakra. So the experience of the transformation of the elements in our subtle body as it plays in the Vishuddha chakra, it's experienced as a subtler form of expansion. And in saying that, I also want to reiterate something that we've talked about a few times, but since it's one of the teachings that I have had to hear again and again and again, I'm going to assume that some of you need to hear it again and again, because, you know, there's really only a few core teachings on the spiritual path that we revisit over and over and over again, and that have deeper meaning every time we revisit them. So it's that the process of spiritual growth is a kind of oscillation that proceeds in a spiral pattern in a way that often seems to go two steps forward and one step back, or sometimes it can feel like it's two steps forward, three steps back, because we become so sensitized in this process that states of awareness that seemed normal, you know, states of suffering or agitation or numbness, or, you know, intense craving, those states which seemed normal throughout much of our life, once we begin to experience this heightened sensitivity in the transformative process, those states feel much more difficult to bear. They hurt more than they used to. One of the commentators on the Yoga Sutras says, the yogi's consciousness becomes as sensitive as an eyeball. So, you know how when you get a hair in your eyeball, it's incredibly painful and disturbing. And it, in the same way, as a yogi, as a yogini, as a person with an awakening and expanding consciousness, the threads of suffering that remain inside your field, as well as in the global field, the field of others, becomes really quite painful. Painful not because we're unconsciously experiencing suffering, but because we are more and more consciously experiencing it, and subtle states of suffering become more present in our awareness. So in the process of unfolding, which is really a process of expansion and contraction, it can sometimes feel like the contractions are taking us into states that feel worse than they were before, but that's actually not what's happening. It's that the contrast between the open state and the contracted state is actually becoming more conscious. And what that means is that your consciousness is being actually being trained. It's being schooled through remaining conscious through the opening and the closing, so that what we're all learning to do is to surf the waves of consciousness, the openings and closings. Little by little, you begin to assimilate the different blocks and obstructions that all of us have in our consciousness, in our field. They begin to become assimilated into the spaciousness of the opening. And over time, the awareness that is able to hold all this, to hold the beautiful love moments and insight moments, also becomes able to hold the moments of closing, such that we don't feel, oh my God, I'm falling, I've completely lost it, I'm completely screwed up here. And as we start to be able to hold these openings and closings, we actually become navigators of our own consciousness. And we begin to realize and to experience in a real way, not just in an intellectual way, how the nature of consciousness is to constantly expand and contract. As a lot of you know, in Sanskrit, the terms for this are Unmesha, which means opening, and Nimesha, which means closing. Unmesha means opening out. Nimesha means closing back, sort of like the way a flower, a hibiscus or a tulip, will open in the warm, when the air is warm, and will often close again when the air is cool. I've been watching these tulips on my puja, opening in the sunshine and then closing up at night, which is really great because, you know, they stay fresh longer when they do that. And it's just like in meditation, when we're in deep meditation, the physical world literally dissolves and the inner world opens. Or in sleep, the physical body does nimesha, the physical body disappears, and the dream body opens up. So, you know, we go in and out of unmesha, nimesha all the time, and the whole world goes in and out of unmesha, nimesha. So this process in our spiritual journey becomes subtle and conscious. And my experience of this is that the more you begin to surf the natural openings and closings, the more you actually begin to recognize that you and the physical world are not separate. You know, that just as daytime dissolves darkness and darkness dissolves daytime, we ourselves oscillate naturally through these states. And over time, that experience allows us to become really aligned with Shakti, with flow, to ride Shakti, so that when we notice ourselves in the suffering state, we can more and more be able to see it as part of the play of Shakti. And this, to me, is really the beginning of true freedom and one of the major gifts of Kundalini. So just bring your awareness to the breath, to the mantra, Om Aim Hrim Shrim, if that's copacetic for you at this moment. Feeling the inhalation drawing your awareness up from the heart, the exhalation allowing presence to flow in from the crown down to the heart. Letting that attention into the central channel be very fluid, very light, very subtle. Noticing that as thoughts arise, you just can say, oh, thought, recognize thought. Recognizing that the journey of Kundalini is literally tailor-made to allow you, as it allows me, as it allows each of us, to see and assimilate the unique aspects of our karmic conditioning. The karma appearing as the particular experience of contraction. So, Kundalini shows us that what looks like loss of presence is actually an opportunity to recognize the karmic patterning that is going to come up and little by little be assimilated and dissolved and eaten by Shakti as Kundalini expands through our being. It's really a remarkable recognition. And the more we are able to stay steady, and even, you know, for 10 minutes through these oscillations, the more we begin to realize that the play in our inner world and the play in the external world are so deeply interrelated and interconnected. That the teaching of how the inner creates the outer begins to become not, you know, some cool New Age teaching that we espouse like a dogma or feel skeptical about. We begin to recognize that the internal and the external are deeply connected, and that the internal, as the internal shifts, the external can also very subtly begin to shift. One of the great modern Sufi masters, Bawa Mahayuddin, who is Coleman Barks' guru, you know, Coleman Barks, the great translator of Rumi, used to say, the car is going down the road, but the road is inside the car. That's such a beautiful way of describing it. The car is going down the road. We are on a spiritual journey, but the road is inside the car. The journey is inside awareness. Shakti is opening you, but you're inside Shakti. Chakra is opening, but you're actually inside the chakra. So just being present with the flow of the breath, flowing up from the heart with the inhalation and flowing down with the exhalation. We're going to look at the awakening of the fifth chakra, and hopefully we'll move into the sixth chakra as well. So in this part of our time together, we're entering into the transpersonal, transcendent realms, where some of the both archetypes of transcendence begin to be revealed, and where also some of the natural human powers, the human gifts that are our birthright, begin to come online. So I will be discussing and describing the chakras according to the way they're depicted in some of the tantric texts, as we said last week, and as I said in an email to Gail on the listserv. There's different ways in which the chakras are seen, because the experience of the chakras, the writings on the chakras, are especially in the tantric tradition, are not so much received through dogma or through through the texts themselves, as they are received and kind of reimagined, re-seen by individual yogis, comparing their personal experience with the texts. You know, so the way that I'm going to describe them is, it's kind of the way that there's general agreement in most of the tantric texts that I've read, and also agreement with my own experience. But I'd like you to listen to what I'm saying more as a way of tuning into the subtle process that is going on in the center, rather than as the description of something that always looks the same way and that always comes online the same way, because the way it is happening for each of us is going to be a combination of visual, kinesthetic, mantric openings in dreams, realizations, emotions. It's going to be the experience of having this chakra activated is going to be completely unique to you, even as there are certain general rules that we can come up with. Rules is not a good word. General tendencies that we can discuss as to how this chakra reveals itself. So one of the very powerful and also very common experiences that we have as the heart opens, as the energy rises through these chakras, is that you start to become conscious of the blocks in the throat. And many of us experience them actually as physical blocks. I have had tons of blocks in my throat chakra. I would say that I still experience them, but one of the ways that I realize that there has been deep movement in my practice is in how many of these throat chakra blocks seem to have been removed. But one of the experiences that I've had for years is that when there's something that I'm afraid to say, or that I'm not sure should be said, you know, because sometimes the impulse to say something might be blocked by an old belief, or, you know, maybe blocked by one of the gods putting their hand on your throat because that's not supposed to come out. It's hard to say. But I think you've probably had this experience also, that there's a kind of a seizing up in the throat. Singers experience it a lot. You know, your throat closes, and I've known some singers. One of my professional singer friends describes this as her neurotic singer persona, where, you know, in certain moods she just never knows if her throat's going to allow her to hit certain notes. For me, it's kind of a feeling of speech becoming hesitant, and sometimes literally the throat closing up. This is, of course, particularly true for people in female bodies. And one of the things I think we know is that historically women have been shushed. You know, it hasn't been okay for women, especially for girls, to say certain things, to speak certain truths, or, you know, to let the fullness of the voice flow through, unless we happen to be opera singers or blues singers. And I think that for many of us, the experiences of croaking or choking or coughing or throat tickling that come up for us are actually the physicalization of some of these blocks. And, you know, not only women, but of course, most men as well, internalize all these messages like nobody cares what you have to say, or shut up, you're being too boisterous, nice boys don't shout, nice girls don't swear, or please don't sing, you can't carry a tune. This is one of my one of the messages that I got a lot as I was growing up. So that even today, chanting a mantra on the call is sort of a big deal for me. I'm one of those people who in the high school chorus was asked to just open and close my mouth and not actually sing. So this is why so much of the work we do with freeing the voice, the physical voice as well as the subtle voice, is so important in opening this chakra. And one of the ways we do this is through chanting. Chanting is just the most extraordinary practice for opening the whole region from the heart through the throat. So as the Vishuddha chakra blocks begin to be pierced, and this is very often an experience of piercing, we become often very conscious of the physical issues, the karmic issues in this part of the body, the neck issues. And I think many, many of us have been through a lot of deaths which happened through this region. I once had a series of past life visions when this chakra was opening intensely of different lifetimes. It was like watching a deck of cards being flipped. I was experienced myself being killed by a bayonet, being strangled, being hung, being decapitated, a whole series of them over lifetimes. And I'm sure that many of us have had those kind of past life flashbacks through the throat, not to mention the this life experiences of whiplash that I know a lot of people have, you know, whiplash experiences from car accidents. But so there's a lot of physicality in the opening of the Vishuddha chakra. But the subtle openings, the subtle coming online that is, let's say, the gift of this opening, which is what I want to talk about as we go on, is really quite extraordinary, because what starts to happen, and I hear this in so many of the conversations and the emails that come from you guys, that literally the wisdom of lifetimes, the wisdom that we've been earning through our practice and our experience, begins to be able to be spoken. It starts to come through the voice, like the recording that Leela sent us. And sometimes in these online classes, someone will send us a chant that they've done or a poem that they've spoken, and we really can hear the deep wisdom and the authentic learning, the gifts and the talents and the capacities of expression that might have been blocked because we've been out of touch with our reservoir of connection to our divinely human self, or which might be natural gifts that we came in with. And as the Vishuddha Chakra and the Ajna as well begin to be pierced by Kundalini, there's a more and more of a the coming online of wisdom, of intuition, knowing things that have been hidden from us, and of course what's often described as higher creativity. That feeling that something you want to say is just on the tip of your tongue, but you can't find it, which is, you know, one of those human frustrations. As the Vishuddha Chakra opens, what I've found is that the thing that's been on the tip of your tongue actually becomes accessible. It's almost like it's almost like a piece of software is opened in your system where you can ask a question and wait, and the answer begins to come online. But the thing that's, you know, really profound is that what comes online, the authentic wise speech, the inspiration that comes up as the Vishuddha Chakra opens, very often doesn't come through the ordinary mind. It comes from that other realm. When my guru first began traveling in the West, he was 64 years old. And he was not he'd never been a teacher. He was, you know, pretty articulate, but he'd never been a teacher. And he began giving these talks, which were really incredibly well articulated, well described, very deep talks on scriptures, especially in his early tours of the West. I can say that my deep education in scripture, in the scriptures of the Indian tradition, a lot of it really came from listening to my guru's talks. And his former attendant tells a story about how in one of his first trips to the West, he was in Australia, and he'd just given a very powerful talk, which is actually available in one of his books. He came in after the satsang was over, and he was shaking his head, and he said, you know, this is so amazing. I'm not a lecturer. I never even finished high school. My guru is so great. These words just come out. And I imagine that you've had that experience also, that wisdom comes out of you. This authentic wisdom comes out of you that you didn't plan, that you didn't write, that you didn't know, sometimes that you even knew. And when that's happening, when the Vishuddha Chakra is opening and that wisdom arises, a lot of stuff starts to happen through your voice that has nothing to do with your personality self. So, you know, one other facet of this before we get into the awakened voice powers or siddhis is a very, I don't know, interesting aspect of extreme Kundalini activation in the center. When my guru was teaching in the West, when he was first teaching in the West, he would give these intensive programs, which he became famous for, in which he would give Shaktipat. He would actually do a very deliberate kind of mass activation of an energy that would, in some cases, literally awaken Kundalini, in other cases, just bring the energy in the room to such a pitch that people would start experiencing their chakras opening. And one of the manifestations of it was this very physical vocalization thing that some people would experience. So people would, you know, find their bodies shaking, which many of you do, or swaying. And these movements are called kriya, which literally means movement. It means a spontaneous movement of shakti. But one of the major kriyas that would happen is that people would start vocalizing. So someone would spontaneously shout out mantras, which often they didn't know. You know, they didn't come from the mind. Sometimes people would make animal sounds, which and there were literally people who would come to programs who would roar like lions or chirp like birds. And there were moments in his programs when it literally felt like meditating in a zoo. And they would say afterwards that it felt like something was coming from a realm that had nothing to do with their will or desire, and it would all be part of the opening of the throat. So when, you know, after a while, because it was, you know, there would be a lot of people in the room and it was disturbing, the volunteers would go around the meditation hall, and when somebody was making a lot of noise, they'd tap the person on the shoulder and just quietly ask them to come outside and meditate in another room. And if they couldn't stop shouting or moving, sometimes the volunteers would give them a piece of banana, a sweet fruit, which would cool down the fiery quality of active kundalini, which, by the way, is a good thing to know yourself. If it feels like the energy is too hot, have a banana or a piece of sweet fruit or a spoonful of honey. So anyway, in one of these programs, there was this high school teacher from Montreal who was French-Canadian, and he started shouting at the top of his voice, "Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman." He had a French accent. "I am Brahman, I am Brahman, je suis Brahman." And, you know, which is an exquisite, great statement from the Vedas. And it was clearly coming through him, and it was actually a little bit thrilling. But didn't stop. So someone tapped him in the shoulder and escorted him out of the room. And then we could hear him sitting outside the hall, and we could hear him shouting, "I am Brahman. I don't want a banana. I am Brahman. I don't want a banana." So I always loved that experience. It's one of the moments that would make me break out into spontaneous laughter. But in fact, what was happening to him was a very deep intuitive knowing that was expressing itself through his voice, in much the same way that, you know, in the Pentecostal Christian tradition, people speak in tongues. It's like you get possessed by the Spirit. And, you know, sometimes it's in a language that you don't know. Sometimes it's, you know, it's in gobbledygook. But it is actually the sound of Shakti moving through and purifying the fifth chakra. And, you know, in the Indian tradition, there is a tradition that's, you know, that's called Bhava, sort of like Amachi, the great Indian woman guru. Sometimes people who know her say that she has these darshans, where she goes into what is called Devi Bhava, where she becomes goddess Kali, and her voice changes, her whole appearance changes. So the Vishuddha Chakra is a center of language, and it's a center where prophetic speech occurs. It's a center of clairvoyance and clairaudience. You literally begin to hear guidance. You can hear things that people are thinking. You can hear conversations that are going on in other cities. I know people who have this experience, and it's really not psychosis. It's an actual experience of this chakra open. Of course, at this point, we actually need discernment to know the difference. It can either be disconcerting or it can be inflating to begin to hear these voices and hear this wisdom. And this is one reason why I feel that understanding the movement of Kundalini is so incredibly important. So, again, let's find the breath. Find the mantric flow of Om Aim Rim Shrim. Feel the mantra and the breath rising from the heart up through the throat. Up through the crown. And then with the exhalation, see if you can allow the breath to bring your awareness fully into the center behind the hollow of the throat. Maybe you feel the breath, the inhalation and exhalation now beginning to occur inside the throat. You know, in Ujjayi breathing, we're asked to make a kind of a guttural noise in the throat. Here, no sound, just a sense of how, as the breath flows in and out, you can bring your attention into this region of the throat, allowing Om Aim Rim Shrim to vibrate in the center behind the hollow in the neck. And as we were doing last week with meditating in the heart, just allow yourself to feel what is present in the center of the throat. And I want to ask you to widen your sense of the throat, to recognize that this center, this fifth chakra center, is not just inside the throat, it's much wider, it surrounds the throat. So see if you can feel the presence of this etheric spaciousness whose center is somewhere behind the hollow of the throat, the hollow in the hollow behind that U-shaped bone, that U-shaped bone in the pit of the throat, and yet rises up through that whole region and is also present around the whole body. So the core of your attention is there in the hollow of the throat, but you're aware of spaciousness surrounding your upper body. Om Aim Rim Shrim now, flowing in as an offering into the throat. And the exhalation, allowing you to become more aware of this center as spaciousness, not just inside, but as wide as Shakti wants to allow your consciousness to expand. because in this center, we actually open to the etheric spaciousness that's, you know, in Sanskrit, the word for ether is akasha. And some of you, some of you may be aware that, that in the sort of new age, new thought world, the wisdom of the ages is said to be encoded in something called the Akashic Record, which is literally the particles of subtle knowledge that exists everywhere, that exists in a non-physical sphere, in Akasha, in space itself. So as our awareness begins to center in this chakra, we actually do begin to experience what it is to channel higher energies or higher knowledge through the voice. So these are some of the superpowers, the siddhis, that arise traditionally as Kundalini opens this chakra. And truthfully, these are natural. It's not like they're special to individuals. They're natural human powers, human awarenesses that for most of us are simply blocked because of our over-identification with the physical self and the mind. But as these voice powers open in the Vishuddha chakra, the voice becomes capable of healing, of giving blessing, and of speaking truth that comes from, you know, what in the biblical tradition is called the prophetic vision, you know, in Jewish mysticism and, of course, in Christian mysticism. Actually, it's in all the Abrahamic religions. There's this understanding of prophecy, not as necessarily prophecies of the future, but speech that comes from this region that you know is clearly resonating from a higher plane, from the Akasha itself. And very often, as we begin to enter into those realms, and we begin to have experiences of something happening in the voice. I have a friend who, sometimes when he speaks, his voice goes into another gear, and very often what he says in that gear will have a, you know, kind of a power and a presence that is not his ordinary human self. There are singers, for instance, whose voices have real healing powers, and they're not necessarily spiritual singers. There's this saloon singer, she's sometimes called, named Betty Buckley, who, when I first met her, she was starring in Cats, the Broadway musical in the 80s, and there's a song she would sing in which there would be a moment when her voice would literally, I would call it going into fourth gear, and it's like the entire room would be electrified. She couldn't always control it, but it would almost inevitably happen. And it was really as though the voice was moving from her physical vocal range into something completely ethereal, like Maria Callas, you know, and many great singers find that place. And when you really listen to a voice like that, you can sometimes feel it literally opening up those centers in you. So the Vishuddha chakra, for that reason, has often been called the center of higher creativity. You know, we could say that composers like Mozart and Bach composed from that chakra, literally downloading music from higher realms or inspired poetry that's coming from, you know, I call them the goddess energies in the Vishuddha chakra. So I'd like to read you a poem by a poet named Dorothy Walters, who's written a really wonderful book that I recommend. She's 86 or 87 years old now. She was an English teacher in the Midwest, and she had a spontaneous Kundalini awakening, which she's written a book about called Unmasking the Rose. And one of the gifts that she received was the gift of poetry. So sometimes she sends me poems, and she actually has a couple of poetry books that I really love. So here's one that I just want to read you, because I think it's such a great example of the inspired poetry that comes through what we could call a regular person, even though she's pretty gifted. And here's her poem. I do not know if God is a thing or a process or a being. I cannot tell you how this world was constructed or when it began or by whom. What I know is this moment, this kiss, this infinite longing, endless loving and being loved by no one who has a name in a place that doesn't exist. Infinite longing, endless loving and being loved by no one who has a name in a place that doesn't exist. This is Vishuddha Chakra poetry, describing, of course, the experience of the inner beloved that so many of you have been sharing. So this chakra is the place of the authentic voice, both the physical voice, the emotional voice, the personal voice, but also of the voice of divine authority. So when this chakra is blocked, it often means that our access to that deeper voice of authority is blocked. But it's also true, as one of the great Sufi teachers, Hazrat Inayat Khan, wrote. He wrote a lot about music and sound. He wrote, "The voice is light itself. The voice is light itself. If that light has become dim, it has not gone out. It's there." It's the same with the voice. If it doesn't shine, it only means that it hasn't been cultivated. You must cultivate it again, and it will begin to shine again. So this is why we chant. And I just want to take a moment or two, I mean literally a moment or two, to chant in an internal way. And we're going to chant to ourselves just for a moment the mantra, the Bij mantra, Hum. Hum. You know, it's pronounced like hung, but with a kind of a nasal at the end. It's the seed syllable of the element ether or space, which is the element of the Vishuddha Chakra. And we were listening to, at the beginning of this class, to the mantra being chanted. And you can right now take your hand, place it over the hollow of your throat, and see if you can feel the warmth of the hand right over that little place where the throat hollows. A part of your palm, your lower palm or the side of your palm against the U-shaped bone. And see if you can feel the warmth of the hand literally warming up your throat. And imagine that in the hollow of your throat, there's a cave, a vast open cave that reaches up into your head and out to the area around your head. And I'm going to play these mantras. And the mantra hum, and then the singer is going to sing some of the mantras, the bijas, bij mantras that are on the petals of the Vishuddha Chakra, the 16 petals of the Vishuddha Chakra. And I'm going to suggest that you sing along, not with any attempt to get it right, but just to feel the resonance in your own voice. See if you can let these mantras resonate in your throat.
Hum.
Visual description to resonate. The chakra is a 16-petaled lotus. The petals are smoky purple, and in the center is a circle of moon-like radiance. It has the purity of the full moon. And in its center, in the center of the circle, is a crescent moon with the seed syllable hung shining inside it. See if you can feel the subtle sound of hung resonating in your throat. The deity of the fifth chakra is the five-faced Shiva. So you can imagine him or this being who really represents the faces of the absolute, vibrating inside the center of the chakra in your own throat. He's made of blue light, and he has five heads which represent the five directions, the five senses, and also five faces of the divine masculine. And I'm going to tell you what they are. One of the faces is called Agura, and it's wrathful, and it's one of the patron deities of left-handed tantra. His quality is space. He's connected with the space of consciousness. He lives in graveyards and cremation grounds. The upward flowing face, there's an upward turned face called Ishana, which is the most benign and loving face of the masculine divine. The nature of Ishana is water. The eastward facing face is Mahadeva, meaning great god, and has the quality of solidity of earth. The fourth face, Sadashiva, is the face of the all-pervading love of the divine that exists in all places, in all times, and in all things, and who is the very form of goodness. And the fifth face, the south-facing face, is Rudra, whose nature is fire, who has the quality of dissolution. And these five faces of Shiva are each supported by a corresponding Shakti. But in the very heart of the chakra is the specific Shakti of the ether element and of the chakra, whose name is Shakini. And she represents the absolute purity and detachment of Kundalini, who has begun to express herself in the etheric realms of the purely transcendent, the transpersonal. And I'm going to say a little bit more about her in a moment. Another kind of significant thing about this chakra is that the 16 petals of the chakra represent completion, which is the number 16 is in the tantric tradition, and actually in the Indian traditions in general, to see if you can keep your awareness in the throat as I speak. You know, it's the moon, as you know, waxes and wanes over a period of 30 days. It actually has two phases, which each have 15 units. So every day it gets a little bit bigger or a little bit smaller. But the 16th phase is the phase of the perfect full moon. So in the Indian traditions, the number 16 represents perfection, fullness, and completion. You know, at the end of the cycle of rising, there's this complete fullness, and then there is the waning. So 16 is the number of the heightened beauty of the completion of the process of our process of karma in the physical world. So in the absolutely ideal Kundalini rising, and for some of you, this experience occurs in meditation, and at some point, it will be a realization that is actually permanent, honest, I promise. So it's the place where our worldly life, our karmic engagement, comes to a kind of completion. And at this point, we are able to open fully into the transpersonal. And again, we come to this place again and again in a spiraling fashion. And it's also the culmination of the process of opening the heart, opening the fourth chakra, such that the wisdom of the fourth chakra, the love and compassion and cooked experience, the earned experience of our humanity opening into our divinity, begins to be expressed as wisdom. You know, this is the place where this is the place of the teacher, of the priest, of the shaman. And it's the place from which our wisdom begins to flow out and experience others. And it's also, this is another one of the, I think, beautiful teachings about this chakra. It's the source of the musical scale. And in India, you know, the Indian classical musical scale is different from the Western scale, but it has seven notes. And these seven notes, the notes inside the octave, are, you know, one of the great metaphors for the process of divinity moving into humanity and humanity moving back into divinity. You know, it's in the Pythagorean system of the West. It's in Kabbalah. It's in the medieval wisdom tradition of esoteric Christianity. And it's very much the expression of the wisdom that begins to arise in the seventh chakra. So the notes of the musical scale are downloaded, so to speak, from the higher realms and flow through the throat chakra, and they become music in the physical world. And they also become the source of the physical universe, which in almost all the esoteric traditions is said to occur through sound, through vibration. So the petals of the chakra contain seven of the petals contain the notes of the scale. And they also contain seven powers, which we mentioned in the first class, which I want to talk about a little bit more. They're the powers of the priest, the seer, and the teacher. One of them is the power to use your voice to exorcise negative spirits. And what this means is that we do have the power to cast away elements of negativity, not just in ourselves, but in other people. And this comes online in a very powerful way as we presence this chakra. The second is the power to conduct rituals, which is, of course, a big deal in traditional cultures, but which for more and more of us is something that's very real in our lives. So when you really have this this power to conduct a ritual, this kind of priest quality, the ritual can transform your consciousness, but also can change things in the physical world, can actually move among the particles of consciousness in the physical world, so that all sorts of things can occur. You know, it's rain can occur through a proper ritual. A real, you know, deeply empowered ritual can change the composition of the earth in a particular place. In other words, your garden or the area around you becomes empowered through the voice of one who can conduct ritual in this way. And again, I know that this is true for many of you here. The third is the power to speak an intention and have it come true. In other words, your intention is not just a wish or a desire. It actually carries with it the power of manifestation. The fourth is the power to give blessings, literally to transmit higher states through the voice. And part of this is the capacity to transmit a mantra such that it will awaken for another person. And this power to teach, to transmit wisdom is another one. And finally, the power to call forth heavenly forces, to bring down forces from the higher realms into the earth. They're all related and they're all gifts. And I know you know what I'm talking about. I know that many of you have felt these arising in yourself. Another one which I would add to this, which is really contained in all of these, and which is one of the gifts of the awakening in the fifth chakra, is that you begin to be able to ask for blessings, to ask for grace, either for yourself or another person, and actually feel that you deserve it. I have found that in the lives of almost everyone I know, including myself, one of the great issues that we need to move through is this feeling that we don't deserve blessing, that we don't deserve grace, that we're flawed. And part of the gift of Kundalini in this chakra is that we begin to feel an absolute recognition of our own purity. Because that is the quality of this chakra. You realize something that all the great teachers have told you again and again and again, which is that your being is without stain, without flaw, that no matter what is going on in the mind, no matter what is being done by the body, your inner being is never, never touched. So, to me, there's sort of subtle recognition of Shakti in the opening in the fifth chakra is that this realization of your own purity becomes not just an occasional experience, but a really deep self-recognition. And it's this recognition of your own purity, your own deservingness, which can ask for what you need, which can pray with full confidence that even in speaking a prayer, that it's fulfilled. You know, it's sometimes said that when we really have the intention for liberation, as soon as that intention becomes real and true for us, liberation is assured. So the Vishuddha is the place where our prayers have the power, so that whatever we pray, through the words, through the powers in the voice, becomes reality. And you know, in our time, a lot of these powers, these recognitions, come about through, you know, the increasingly popular shamanic practice, because these fifth chakra powers are actually powers of shamans. Shamans particularly cultivate these gifts of blessing, of transmitting higher states, of calling down heavenly forces, of performing rituals, exorcising negativities. You know, in olden times, these were the properties of priests. And in indigenous cultures, the shaman was the person who did that. And more in our time, people tune into those powers through what are called shamanic rituals. And another one of the qualities that a rope opens in this chakra is the power of traveling in the subtle realms. The fifth chakra is the place not only of inspired speech and inspiration and creativity, but it's also the place where we can have true dreams and astral travel in dreams, and where a very, very deep initiation begins to take place. And for many of us, the experience of spiritual maturation is actually the experience of learning how to bring the wisdom of dream and the wisdom of meditation and the wisdom of inspired insight down to the breakfast table, so to speak, so that, you know, so that we can actually express through the whole body the awareness that we experience in our higher states. The Shakti Shakini, whom I mentioned before, is also known as Shvateshwari, which means the white goddess. My guru used to call the awakening in the throat the awakening of Shvateshwari, and who is associated with the dream state, with, you know, the dream state meaning also the state of meditative vision. So this is a place where vision, the capacity to vision, and, you know, we've all practiced with vision, with envisioning, with creating visions for ourselves. So the goddess, the Shakini, the Shvateshwari of the fifth chakra, is the Shakti who empowers our visioning, whether spontaneously, you know, the visions that come on their own, or through our practice. And the white goddess is also the name of a book on the Western goddess by the poet and scholar Robert Graves, who I came to understand this summer when I was teaching a class on the Western, which included the Western goddesses. I began to research and meditate on the goddess Isis, who Robert Graves considered his goddess. And as many of you know, Isis is one of the great initiatory goddesses of the Western tradition. She is literally the goddess who stands at the threshold of dreams, of mystical experiences. She was one of the leading Shaktis of the Western mystery traditions, and I've come to know quite a few women, Western women and men as well, who currently experience goddess Shakti as Isis. So she is in a very real way a form of that presence who opens as the fifth chakra opens, and as our dreams begin to open, and as our visionary capacities begin to open. So one of the practices that I'd like us to do this week is to begin asking questions in the dream state. So in other words, beginning to cultivate the presence of the goddess of the fifth chakra, whom we can call Shakini, or Shweteshwari, the white goddess, or Isis, or in my own practice, I experience her as goddess Saraswati, the goddess of inspired speech, wisdom. And as you begin to do this practice, which I will send you in the homework, of literally sitting down before you go to sleep at night and writing a question, it's very important to write it, asking the goddess, asking the self to give you a dream that will answer your question or bring you awareness of what it is that's opening in you or that you need to work on. So this quest, this process of cultivating dream is very much a process of tuning into the goddess of the fifth chakra. And there's one more aspect of this chakra that I want to mention, which is that as this chakra begins to open, we start to be able to hear inner sounds, which are also associated with the fifth chakra. These inner sounds in Sanskrit are called nada, N-A-D-A, which literally means inner sound. And in the Kundalini tradition, it's said that as yoga arises spontaneously, one of the deep yogas that starts to arise as Kundalini flows into the upper chakras is called Laya Yoga, which is also the name of a book I recommend on the chakras. Laya literally means absorption or dissolution, and it's the capacity that arises for the physical to dissolve into the subtle. And this experience of our identification with the physical becoming more and more subtleized is the kind of inner essence of what happens as Kundalini, the awake Kundalini, rises through the chakras. And one of the practices of Laya Yoga, which is a spontaneous experience that many of you have, is the beginning of hearing inner sounds, which for me, and for years, there's been a kind of a high-pitched sound, which sounds like the summer crickets in New Jersey, which is where I grew up. And it's a kind of a continuous, not exactly a chirp, but a kind of a hum. It's one of the initial experiences of the opening of nada, the sacred sound. And one of the practices of Laya Yoga, when you hear that sound, you meditate on it. You can follow it, and it will just begin to segue into subtler and subtler realms. There's a practice in Laya Yoga where you close your ears with your fingers so that you hear the inner sound and you follow the sound. You actually listen deeply to it. And I know that a lot of you have this sound in your ears. It might be there all the time. And sometimes people think it's tinnitus. Actually, it's not. It's nada. It's the inner sound, which is a kind of a spontaneous mantric sound that can take our consciousness deeper and deeper into the inner worlds. The inside of the inside of that sound is Om. And the nada, the inner sounds, there are 10 classical nada that I know some of you have heard. There's a sound like a flute. There's a sound like the inside of a conch shell. There's a sound, various forms of cricket sounds. And there's one that happens when you're very deep in meditation in the Sahasrara and the highest chakra, which sounds like a sonic boom. It's called the thunder nada. And you know, if you've ever had the experience of being awakened by a thunder sound that brings you out of sleep, I've had this often. That's the thunder nada. It's the sound of Kundalini working in the higher chakras. And when it comes in the middle of the night and wakes you up, just think of it as a signal to sit up and meditate. So let's let the mantra flow into the throat chakra. Let the mantra hum, or Om Aim Hrim Shrim. I'm giving you a choice. Just let the breath flow with the mantra into the throat. And I want to offer you the deep practice for the Vishuddha Chakra, which is the practice of surrender to the higher will. Because as our awareness moves up into this realm, one of the, let's say, demands or invitations is the invitation to let go of the idea that you can control your destiny, or the idea that you have to exercise personal will in order for anything to happen. And to begin to investigate what it really means to surrender. And this week, we're going to make our walking around practice the practice of investigating surrender, letting go. And the way I have practiced it is to begin by looking at what it is that you want in any given moment or in the larger arc of your life, to sense into what you want or what you desire. To feel it, and then to turn it over. To really allow yourself to recognize with deeper and deeper sincerity, let this be turned over to the higher will. If it be your will, you know, as Leonard Cohen has a beautiful song, if it be thy will, if it be thy will, I will sing no more, he says. Expressing a very deep stage of surrender. And at a certain point, that surrender becomes not something that you do yourself, but something that occurs. So in this practice, in this moment, in this meditation, with your awareness in this region of the throat, consider what it means for you to align your will with Kundalini's design for you. And in this meditation, perhaps we can say it's aligning with the intention to allow her to meditate for you. So allow your awareness to flow into the hollow of the throat. Feel the connection of the heart and the space in the throat, sensing this whole area opening backwards to each side into a space of awareness, of greater spaciousness. And with this subtle attention in the throat, allow yourself to just be as you are in this moment. Thoughts arising, feelings in the body arising. Your intention is to allow yourself to be fully present right here, right now, with whatever it is you're experiencing. The sound of my voice, feelings in your body, thoughts that are arising or not. And whatever is arising, have the thought, let me let this go. I'm willing to let this go. I'm willing to simply be here, letting everything be as it is, knowing that whatever is the expression of divine will at this moment. Surrendering distraction, surrendering expectation, just letting yourself be with what is. And see if you can notice the energy in the throat beginning to expand upwards, your attention beginning to rise through the center of the throat, opening outward, opening upward. Allowing the realm of the white goddess, the moon-like perfection of spaciousness, to simply open your being. If a thought arises, see if you can let it go. See if you can have the awareness. Let this be thy will, or thy will be done. Not the will of some god in the sky, but the will of that spacious presence who is unfolding within you with the intention of opening you completely to the truth of yourself. Whatever mood is arising, whatever thought, whatever physical experience, feel it being offered up to Goddess, to Kundalini, the unfolding presence of your higher self. So you can take a breath in and maybe put your hand over your heart, rub your heart, rub your belly. Be aware of what's arising inside the field of your awareness. Feel the taste of the stillness. And I want to open the conversation to questions in the time we have. Some of you may want to just stay in meditation. But if you have a question that you'd like to ask, you can press *7.
Hi, Sally.
Hi.
It's Wendy.
Hey, how are you, Wendy?
Oh, I'm so happy to be with you. So grateful. I just can't even believe how many things you know. So, and just so unbelievably generous with your wisdom. It's really remarkable, incredibly rare. So it's an incredible gift, and it's totally working in me. And so just really want to express unbelievable gratitude. And, you know, the watching the working of the group has been kind of an astounding thing also, you know, how you can not know people and then yet be witness to such deep unfolding is kind of an incredibly rare thing too. So I just want to say that, but I also want to ask about, so anyway, that was super interesting about that weird sounds that I thought I was going deaf or something was actually some spiritual awakening that, like, sounds. But as I have that happen a lot where suddenly this really loud, sharp sound happens in my head and I never had any idea that that was, like, nada. So that makes me feel relieved.
Oh, that's so good.
But I, you know, you talk a lot about the Bhuvaneshwari goddess as that spacious place of holding. And in your other work, so is that the same energy as Bhairava also? Like, I hear that a lot of times I hear this holding, but it's male. It's not female.
Yeah, and, you know, Wendy, thank you for that question. I was just talking to a friend of mine who's married to a guy who's a teacher, a spiritual teacher, who talks about this holding presence entirely as Shiva. And she was saying she was feeling a little disloyal because her experience is that this holding presence is feminine. The truth is, presence is presence, and it has a masculine flavor and a feminine flavor. And the way we experience it at given moments depends on, you know, where we are able to tune into the presence of holding love. And for some people, it really does feel like a masculine presence, and for some people, it feels very motherly. For me, it has
this kind of, you know, it's interesting because it has this submissive quality, like this surrender quality a lot.
Right, right.
You know, and I just wonder if that's because I do so much sexual work, or I, don't know what that is, but I try not to judge it, but it just is, it's impossible to turn away. It's impossible to turn away.
Yeah, well, yeah, so it is submissive qualities in the presence or in yourself?
It's in myself when I hear this voice. It's like,
right.
You know,
right.
I've given you everything. How can you, you know, I mean, it's just so clear. And, you know, this experience of freedom, which I, again, tonight had such a exquisite visceral experience of that in my throat. I mean, I learned so many things I never knew when you were speaking, but it was actually quite visceral. But I think I wrote a note about just how, you know, this freedom of knowing that nothing had ever been failed in me. I'd never failed anyone. And it's just, I couldn't have asked for that. I didn't even know to ask for it.
Yeah.
But it's changed everything.
Yeah, that's so beautiful.
I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. Thank you.
Well, it's the wisdom of your own higher self, and that's the experience of that fundamental purity that is you just coming online, and that's so beautiful, and it will only grow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I kind of don't want this to end, Sally. I feel like
we
should start over.
There's always more. There's always more. There's no end. There's no end to Kundalini and to Satsang. So thank you. And thank you for those recognitions that you're having of your own being. It's very beautiful.
Yeah, I'll let somebody else have a turn, but I'm so indebted.
Well, I am equally indebted to you. We do this together. So, if someone else has a question, we have another moment. You can press *7. Hello?
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 Hello. Okay, there are two of you. Yes, there's a question. Yes.
Sally, hi. Please,
hi.
Good evening.
Hey.
I have a question about using yantra as a practice aid. You have a little bit to say in it in your meditation book, but I haven't found anything else. Is it a helpful thing to use a yantra in meditation?
Yes, totally. Can you, I'm hearing a little echo of my own voice. Yes, yantra is a terrific practice. And what I would say is, if you're drawn to a yantra, then definitely use it. But remember to, at some point, close your eyes and find the yantra, the subtle felt sense of the yantra inside yourself, so that you're not focusing entirely outward, but letting the subtle power inside the yantra take your awareness inside. So the pictures of the Vishuddha chakra, in fact, the pictures of all the chakras are actually yantras. And the pictures of the chakras are in the private area of the website, and they are intended as a visual aid. So you can practice with the yantra, the chakra yantra, the mandala of the chakra with its petals, and just feel it resonating in that part of your body, especially with the Bij mantra or with Om Aim Hrim Shrim and just see what happens. It's a very powerful practice. It's a very, very much a practice of the tantric traditions. And if you're drawn there, that's great. So thank you for that question. There's a question on the web that Deb just sent me. Someone says she hears a high-pitched sound in her right ear, and yes, that is the nada. It's absolutely the nada, and the same person writes, I used to hear angelic music in my left ear before going to sleep. Yes, this is also nada, and all of those mysterious, subtle sounds that arise, especially the sounds of singing and musical instruments, are sounds of the nada. And I will send you some a kind of a more exact description of the different types of nada in the homework assignment. So Dawn had a question, and you can press *7, or Deb will unmute you. Oh, you're on the website. You're on the web. Okay. So Deb is unmuting you, Dawn. Hi.
So I had a question about Kundalini working within, I feel like when you described Kundalini awakening, that I've had them prior to knowing about Kundalini. And is this possible? I'm sure it is. I feel very kind of new to this more intense spiritual path in the last 3 to 4 years. But I definitely feel like many of the awakenings you talked about, I experienced before this course. And also getting, you know, hit on the head the other day, I remember reading one of your, on the listserv saying, sometimes Kundalini will come and physically bonk you on the head.
Right.
And then, so I was like, it really resonated with me. And I do feel that there's definitely some overlap as much as with what happened getting hit on the head and my concussion with this work. So I just wanted to ask more about the inner workings of Kundalini. I definitely see it as a inner whirlpool of water moving up through my Sushumna Nadi for sure.
So. Yeah, that's that image of the, you know, the spiraling water, the flow, mm-hmm. is one of the classic ways in which Kundalini moves. And yes, Dawn, I'm sure that you've experienced this opening and awakening previously because you've been doing spiritual work for a long time. You know, there are a lot of different levels of awakening that you've been through, and also that many of you guys have been through. So my real motivation for giving this class and all the teaching that I do on Kundalini is it's really for the sake of helping you recognize the inner process that for many of us has been going on for years, and which, you know, the more we understand it, the more we recognize it, and the more we, you know, kind of debug our mythology about it, the more we relax in the process. But yeah, it's a very natural process. And I would also say that even in a physical situation like the concussion, there can be, you know, real palpable spiritual unfoldings that accompany it. You know, that's kind of the remarkable thing about this awakening process, because, you know, the physical, the subtle, and the supra subtle are all very much aligned, and even though it's very important to take care of things on the physical level, we also start to recognize that sometimes a physical experience or a sickness or, you know, some form of knock on the head is actually not just a physical experience, but is opening us subtly in a way that's significant. And that's so much the mystery of this process. Everything is part of the unfolding. You know, nothing's wrong, in other words. Nothing's ever really wrong.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dawn. And I would love to go on with questions. I sort of went the unfolding of the conversation went on longer than I had intended, because it actually felt like the meditative spaces wanted to open up. So we're going to bring this class to a close, because I know you guys all have schedules. Please do feel free to write in questions, and we'll have some more time for questions next week, I promise. Your homework is going to come tomorrow, and my love comes always. So thank you so much for not only being here, but for everything that each of you is bringing to the space that we're creating together and to the conversation on the listserv, and to everything that you're bringing into your interactions with the world, to the transformation of consciousness that we're all engaged in, that we're all called to, and that is really the expression of the will of Kundalini. So thank you so much. Love so much. Have a beautiful unfolding evening and day and week, and we'll see each other next week. Namaste.